ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
There's been a strong reaction in Australia to signals that the federal government could join international conversations about the possibility of recognising Palestine as a state. I spoke with Foreign Minister Senator Penny Wong yesterday, who said it was essential to forming a lasting peace in the Middle East.
What is the path to peace? I don't see, any security for Israel without the issue of Palestinian statehood being resolved.
That's the Foreign Minister on RN Breakfast yesterday. The federal government says any two-state solution would have no place for Hamas, but critics say recognition would reward the terrorist group. One of those concerned is the Executive Council of Australian Jewry. Its co-CEO, Alex Rivchen, joins me now. Alex, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Talking to members of your organisation and community, how would you describe the reaction to Penny Wong's speech and subsequent comments on a two-state solution in the Middle East?
I would say there's disappointment on two levels. Firstly, the timing of the speech. There's a strong feeling that at a time when 134 Israelis remain captive by Hamas in the most horrible conditions imaginable, I've met with some of the released captives, I've met with the families of the existing captives. My heart is with them. I can only imagine the torment they're going through moment by moment. And our strong feeling is that right now, all of our conversations and all of our government's energies should be directed towards releasing those hostages, not merely making statements calling for their release, but applying pressure on the Qataris to ensure their release. And then when you turn to the substance of the matter about the call for a two-state solution, that's something that the Executive Council of Australian Jewry and the majority of our community has supported for a long, long time. But we support genuine peace building between the sides and an end to the conflict. And that is not achieved by mere counterfactual proclamations about a Palestinian state existing. It can only be achieved through trust building between the parties and building the institutions in Palestinian society necessary for democracy and statehood. That's a long road, but it needs to be undertaken.
What do you think about the timing of Penny Wong's remarks?
Well, I think they're problematic. As I said, the focus needs to be on the release of the hostages and ending this war and ending the immediate suffering. And talking about long-term political solutions is not correct at this time. I wish that all of the airtime and all of the energies directed towards this conversation were directed towards ending this war, bringing about the downfall of Hamas and freeing the captives. I think that should be the absolute imperative of our society and our government at this time.
Do you understand some of the international reaction towards Israel, concern over the number of civilian deaths in Gaza, and also pressure on Israel not to go ahead with its planned ground invasion in Rafah because of civilian casualties?
Well, look, no one wants to see civilian suffering, and without question, many, many people are suffering because of this war. And no one wants to see aid workers hit, and no one wants to see civilians caught up in the fighting. But when you have this terrorist force embedded, when you have four battalions of Hamas fighters, some 10,000 fighters remaining in Rafah, when you have virtually the entirety of the leadership intact underground in Rafah and 134 hostages surrounding those leaders, you have to go in there and you have to finish the job. There's no other way. Hamas won't listen to the strong words of international leaders and governments. It only responds to force. There's no other way. Of course, Hamas could end this war today if it released the hostages and laid down its arms. That is the best way to protect the civilian population in Rafah and to end this war. But in the absence of that, I see an invasion of Rafah as an inevitability. Just overnight, we saw Hamas reject another US brokered call for a ceasefire, 6-week ceasefire, because they couldn't locate 40 hostages to be released in the exchange. So this speaks to where Hamas is and what they're thinking and their determination to fight to the death, to the detriment of their own people primarily.
Alex, Israel says it's investigating the circumstances of the killing of 7 World Central Kitchen aid workers in Gaza, of course, including an Australian. Australia has called for accountability and transparency in that investigation and has sent over a special advisor. Do you think sending an advisor was necessary?
I don't think so. I mean, we've supported wholeheartedly the government's calls for a full and independent investigation and for accountability for the death of Zomi Frankem and 6 other aid workers. Absolutely. And Israel very quickly accepted responsibility. The president and the prime minister apologized for the incident. They called for an independent investigation. The preliminary parts of that investigation found fault and led to the dismissals of two senior officers and to the censure of several others. Israel has said these are just the beginning of the steps to of accountability for this process. But the deploying of an envoy, I think, is an unusual step. I think it's unnecessary. And I think between allies and friends, there needs to be a degree of good faith that Israel will conduct this investigation and hold those responsible to account. It has every interest in doing so. This is just the latest in a series of very tragic, horrifying friendly fire incidents. Of course, in the early exchanges of the war, we saw Israeli commander...
Just with this, you're using the word friendly fire, but these vehicles were targeted three or more times without being identified properly. Is friendly fire the correct term to be using when still we're waiting for the full investigation?
Well, we might call it accidental fire, but there's no evidence whatsoever that Israel intended to kill the aid workers. They struck the vehicles. There's no question about that. Israel has accepted that. Why they did that and the circumstance in which that happened, were there fighters in the area? That's what's being investigated. But as I said, Israel has every interest in stopping these sorts of incidents. Three Israeli hostages who managed to escape their captors were killed in a similar incident. It's been estimated that up to a third of all Israeli combat injuries and deaths in this war are as a result of friendly fire, accidental fire as well.
With respect, that's a separate issue. With respect, the casualties for those who are combatants, that's a separate issue, isn't it, to aid workers and their deaths?
Look, I think there's a broad issue of misidentification and hitting the wrong targets. And when you have a war of this nature, of urban warfare, of a terrorist force embedded within a civilian population, these things happen. But that's not acceptable. These things shouldn't happen as far as possible. And that's why we need an investigation to determine why it happened in this instance and what changes can be made to Israeli policies and processes to ensure it doesn't happen again. Absolutely, there should be accountability. I'm just questioning whether the envoy is a necessary step to achieving that.
The relationship between Australia and Israel, how would you describe it at the moment? Is it at a low point at the moment, do you think?
I don't believe so. I was in Israel very recently and I spoke to very many Israelis, from the victims and survivors of October 7 to the soldiers to politicians and diplomats, and they still overwhelmingly view Australia as an ally, as a wonderful country and a friendly country, and they have a very positive attitude towards Australians and towards our government. Obviously, there will be disagreements on matters of policy from time to time. That's inevitable. But the relationship between our two countries has been established and in place and vibrant on very many levels that benefit Australians and Israelis for decades, and that will prevail, no doubt.
Do you accept that there are a wide range of views within the so-called Jewish community in Australia? We've had a text message through as well talking on that point, that there are a diversity of views in the Jewish community about what's unfolding at the moment, and that your organisation doesn't represent many in the community who support both Israel's right to exist and the freedom of the Palestinian people.
No, I reject that wholeheartedly. I mean, my organisation has been around since 1944. It sits at the top of some 200 organisations around the country, religious and secular, left-wing and right-wing, conservative and progressive, LGBT and feminist. I speak to the leadership and members of those groups on a daily basis. I can assure you that the community, while there is, of course, disagreement on how the war should be conducted and the future of Prime Minister Netanyahu and all these things, there's vibrant debate about that. But in terms of baseline support for the state of Israel, in terms of unity within the Jewish community, in terms of determination to fight anti-Semitism in this country, I have never seen the community more determined and more unified. Every community has its fringe players, but what I think is a bit peculiar is that only in the case of the Jewish community do those fringe voices get amplified to create the false impression that there are these divisions and schisms in the community which don't actually exist.
Alex Rifkin, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
That's Alex Rifkin there, Executive Council of Australian Jewry, co-CEO. You're listening to Breakfast.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.